DePaul is Chicago's College Connection. Radio DePaul is Chicago's College Connection.
Good morning, Scrawl Nation. Today is Friday, October 12th, and this is Radio DePaul, Chicago's College Connection. You're listening to Scrawl Radio, hurried but well-considered thoughts about peer writing, tutoring, and the writing process, brought to you by the University Center for Writing-Based Learning, a.k.a. The Equable. I'm your host, Kristen V, joined by my fabulous co-host, first, Gia Z. Gia, what's new this morning?
Oh my gosh, nothing. It's finally cold. That's new. It's finally just cold. You know,
it really
real
is
fall.
What's new.
Yeah.
That's what's new. My other lovely co-host, Emily. Emily, what's up this
Hello,
morning?
Hello, everyone. I'm also very excited that it's cold. Get to break out my jacket, which I love.
It's jacket season, everyone.
Jacket season.
Official.
Mm-hmm. It's jackets.
You know what else has jackets? Books.
Oh.
You know what books have? Words.
You know what we're about.
Words. So today we're talking about, speaking of words, today we're talking about rhetoric.
Rhetoric.
You've all heard it. You've all heard the word rhetoric in your one WRD 103 or 104 class, whichever one teaches it. I think it's 103.
Mm-hmm.
We've all had to do the rhetorical analysis papers, but as tutors, we are wondering how many people actually know what rhetoric is or means, because I often see people or work with people who are a little confused about the true meaning of rhetoric.
Mm-hmm. That's real, Gia.
Yeah.
And also, I feel like I hear it tossed around just conversation in the political sphere quite a bit. And
be like rhetoric.
Just kind of
like,
wonder
okay.
how much of it is a buzzword. Let's analyze.
Yeah. Emily?
Mm-hmm. So, as an English major, something that we look into a lot is rhetoric and words and how we use them. So, in looking kind of for a one-size-fits-all type of definition for rhetoric, you can really interpret it as just using different tools and devices to convince someone of something that you want them to believe. So, for example, in writing, people use rhetorical devices like simile and metaphor to show how things are like things. In the political sphere, people use different kinds of rhetoric. They may use an angry rhetoric or a friendly rhetoric to like try to win people over.
Hi.
But really, all rhetoric is are the words that you choose in order to convince someone of something. So, like, the biggest example of this in my mind that everyone uses every single day is hyperbole. And that statement itself was hyperbole, because all hyperbole is mm-hmm. is an exaggeration mm-hmm. that you kind of lie about something a little bit for emphasis. So by saying everyone does this every single day, big exaggeration. So you have probably used hyperbole, which is mm-hmm. a rhetorical device.
Ooh.
Well done.
Yeah.
Do it to him.
I just said well done to myself.
Well done, Emily, explaining that.
Thanks.
Yeah, we use rhetoric every day in everything we do. I know that I do. When we're trying to convince people to do something, when we're trying to work with people at the Equable, everything in our lives has rhetoric, which is crazy. Kristen, did you want to comment on rhetoric?
Yeah, I mean, just as writing tutors, even the device of taking on a certain tone or just any approach really serves as rhetoric, because rhetoric, at the end of the day, it is words, but it's also any device that one uses with the motivation to have their audience convinced of their point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's actually an awesome point about the devices, because in rhetoric there are a lot of concepts and things that you can do that actually have names and terms for them. For example, they're saying devices. Something like when you sorry about that. when you repeat something at the beginning of a phrase and then again at the end of a phrase, for example, like Walmart, their slogan is always low prices, always. So that repetition of the same, the word at the beginning and the end, there's a word for that, and it's epanalepsis, which we don't really know.
Will you repeat that for us again?
Epanalepsis.
Epanalepsis.
Yes. So I think it's funny that we use a lot of these things every single day, but we have no idea that there are actually names for, like, the things we are doing. It's also kind of hard to talk about rhetoric, I've noticed, because rhetoric isn't like a physical object. It isn't a physical thing that you can see. Uh-huh. It is kind of just a thing.
It's an underlying.
It's a concept.
Yeah.
And it's a thing that happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting kind of how it like influences itself. And what I mean by that is people talking in a group, you know, just the way that rhetoric gets like rubbed around, and there's eventually a homogenous rhetoric achieved, especially in like groups of people either like meeting for the first time, you know, just like playing it cool, playing it nice. They all somehow there's a decision made about the rhetoric, which is interesting to think about. Another really cool example of rhetoric that's come up recently at the Writing Center, the Equiple, is so I don't know if any of our listeners remember last week when we had on our guest Mark.
Shout out Mark, CMWRT.
Friend of the show.
CMWRT. Yeah, so his department, CMWR, they actually just revised the analogy that they use to refer to programs that help students who are in the process of improving or even learning English. So the rhetoric aspect of this has to do with the fact that the old acronym was ESL, which stood for English as a Second Language. The acronym now has been changed to EAL and stands for English as an Additional Language. And we, before the show, were just really chatting about how this is so rhetorical because the device with tied up in the words really aims to, you know, hope that people rethink the way that they understand this process that writers are going through. And they made that change, and it was very meaningful. Yeah, Gio, what's up? Yeah,
we talked about it a little bit last week, too, how just it's the message that the actual acronym gives off, and, like, the two messages are very different. Like, ESL, I think, comes from more of, like, a Western perspective, where it's a lot like it has to be your second language.
Yeah, and if it's it puts not an your mother
emphasis,
tongue.
Yeah, it puts an emphasis on, like, the importance of the English language.
Yeah,
I think more than the person who is learning it.
Yeah,
yeah. So I think EAL is just a lot more inclusive in that the rhetoric it uses gives off the like image that this is just another language that this learner is learning. It's not like the only language.
Yeah,
you know, it's not their second language. It's not like the language that's going to take over their mother tongue. It's just another language they're learning, which I think
I really
puts
like
a lot
that.
Of emphasis on the learner instead of the language.
Yeah, the word choice there is really a meaningful device.
Yeah,
acronyms are interesting in that way, and when they change, that is very interesting. Like when an acronym changes to mean something slightly different, you know, you just wonder.
Yeah.
You
like,
just
what
do.
Was the reason?
Yeah, like, what was the committee thinking about when they were like, well, this isn't really working for us anymore.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Emily, you want to comment?
Yeah. I think that, yeah, we definitely use rhetoric so much at the Equiple in everything we do. And another kind of device that's used a lot by people not necessarily at the Equiple, but in the political sphere. I know. As a reminder, at the Equiple, we are here for everyone.
Regardless of political party.
Seriously.
Religious
belief. Yeah, pull up.
We just understand the issues politics causes. So that is why we UGG.
Yeah.
But not only at the Uncle Bowl, but in the political sphere, people use rhetoric to kind of give off an image of themselves. Yeah.
I think the entire concept of politics is just rhetoric.
It's trying to get people to believe your rhetoric. Yeah, right. Yeah. But one of the biggest kind of examples of rhetoric, a rhetorical device explicitly being used, is JFK's quote, "Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country," is actually a rhetorical device called anti-metaboly, which means repeating a word or phrase in reverse order for emphasis. So JFK was using rhetorical devices before they even had names. However, the politicians of today's time may use different ones than that one particularly. Yeah. Gia, do you want to speak on that a bit?
Yeah, also about JFK. I mean, that phrase was hugely influential. It literally got lots of young people to sign up for a war.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it hopes to make the audience feel as though they are simply thinking about
their country,
the topic, in the wrong way. Oppositely, they went, "Oh, I just mixed it up.
It's me."
Instead of, yeah, exactly.
The problem is me.
I just mixed it up in my head. It's backwards. Mm-hmm. Anywho, Gia, what were you saying?
Yeah, so today we see a lot of rhetoric in different ways. One example is the way that our current president, Donald Trump, uses rhetoric, which is really interesting. He was really rhetoric heavy during his campaigns, playing mostly to this concept of patriotism. Mm-hmm. So Donald Trump used a very isolationist rhetoric to describe the fact that... thank you. Mm-hmm. Had a cough a little. It's appealing to the audience's love of country. So it's persuading them to act by implying that, you know, certain people who disagree with him or people who are opposing him, for example, at the time, the Democratic candidate, Hillary Clinton, that, you know, the whole idea of going against him is treasonous or against the country because he is pro-patriotism. Mm-hmm. So implying, wow. Yeah, implying that, you know, making America great again, focusing on, I think the concept of again in that sentence is really interesting.
Ooh, yeah.
Implying that we've strayed from ideals.
Ooh, yeah.
I think that was the biggest thing, where he appealed to a lot of voters who weren't happy with the way that America was functioning, mm-hmm, under the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm. Really?
But maybe were happy with, say, the Bush administration, or like older people who longed for like Reagan era, Clinton era, like tranquility, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That concept of going back, which is a very Republican and conservative ideal anyways, going back to the good old days, making America great once more. Huge rhetoric, obviously won him a whole entire election.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
definitely worked.
Rhetoric is power, you know.
Campaign worked.
Yeah, you want to comment on that, Kristen?
Yeah, just to bring up, there's a really relevant, active, he's a pollster, a guy by the name Frank Luntz, and actually he does a bunch of research on the way that certain words and terms make voter demographics feel.
Yeah.
Basically study groups, right? Yeah, he sits them all down and he talks about concepts with them using different jargon and gets their feedback. And he will only give the results of his work up to the Republican Party. He actually was president of like the Young Republicans Club when he was younger. So he works closely with Republican politicians and lets them know that they shouldn't say, you know, the government in their speeches anymore. They should say Washington. They shouldn't say global warming when they're speaking about environmental issues. They should say climate change. And they shouldn't say, oh gosh, what was the one with the death tax? There's one where they started calling the death tax something.
The death tax?
Yeah, okay, sorry. I shouldn't have probably brought that up since I don't remember. I think it was estate tax.
Estate
so
tax.
It was estate tax, which is a tax that, it's like if a person in your family dies, you pay a tax on their estate, and Republicans are not in favor of it. So yeah. Frank Luntz goes,
let's call
start
the death
calling
tax.
It the death tax, actually.
Yeah. So it freaks
that
people out.
That is rhetoric.
There
yeah.
it is. There it is.
Yeah. And
Emily, what's up?
That thing that you just talked about saying, don't say the government, say Washington or say the
it.
White House.
Yeah.
That is
Frank
another
Luntz.
Rhetorical device called
what?
Metonymy.
What?
Yeah.
What?
It's using, you use a, it's when you use a part of something to refer to the whole of something because that certain part, that certain part
is less scary.
Is less scary. Or
that
more
is
familiar.
A great point.
Mm-hmm.
That's Washington why, like, is part of the government.
Yeah,
only part.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And if you say, like, if you're about to say something about the government or whatever, and you say, "Oh yeah, well, over the White House," it's
yeah.
a different
yeah.
feel.
People
you know?
Think about yeah,
over in the government. Yeah, Gia, do you have something to add?
Yeah, I was just gonna say that I think rhetoric is really the key to being a great influential leader in general.
Right.
For example, I wanted to talk about this. I remembered it. I wrote a paper in high school, and I was supposed to choose an influential leader and discuss how they were influential using rhetoric. Most people chose positive influences. Mm-hmm. However, I chose Jim Jones of Jonestown.
Oh, that's a great example,
that's a great
though.
Example.
Yeah.
Let's
indeed.
Talk about cult leaders.
Please
first.
Speak more on this. Yeah.
So. In high school, I was really fascinated by cults because I think that it's incredible that you can convince people to do crazy, crazy things and believe in crazy things just by saying, like, hey, you think about it to them. So Jim Jones, little background, is a pastor from the 70s. He created what he called the Family in the mid 70s. And it was just a religious group that, you know, felt that he had a lot of good things to say and that he took care of them and they were very close knit. Mm-hmm. Government started looking into them. I'll say the government, I don't care.
not the, trying to get the government.
Washington.
Yeah, yeah, I don't say Washington. The government started looking into them because they heard some shady stuff was going down, and it was. So they fled the Jonestown family and they went to South America, I believe. It was Guyana, Jonestown, Guyana.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like a town of like 100, 200 people who were just living under the rule of this man because they truly believed that he was like God.
Wow.
And then there's a famous speech. The government kept coming in. They kept sending reporters. They knew that there was a lot of stuff going around. Like drugs and, you know, abuse and stuff. And
crazy.
There were people who wanted to leave Jonestown, but they weren't letting them leave. So people, it was unraveling. Jim Jones made this speech. And he basically convinced over 200 people to drink cyanide-laced Kool-Aid and kill themselves in a mass suicide. Which is where the phrase "don't drink the Kool-Aid" comes from,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, he had this amazing speech. Emily, do you want to comment?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is a perfect example of how like rhetoric is used in places we maybe wouldn't think, because this speech that Gia is talking about, which is pretty famous, uses two really, really important rhetorical devices. One of which is appeal to fear, which uses information to scare the audience into something. And he was scaring the audience into thinking that if they stayed on Earth one more minute, they would burn in hell.
Yeah.
Or they would be, like, destroyed. He mm-hmm. also used a lot of appeal to authority and used a lot of different kind of information that sounded very official and very correct,
yep.
which added to his perceived credibility and made all these people do exactly what he said.
Mm-hmm. I actually just found a wonderful article from the University of San Diego on the rhetoric of Jim Jones.
Wow.
Yeah, so a good
maybe
read
we'll,
for later.
We'll
maybe.
Link that up on our blog post later so
yeah.
that if you want to take a look.
Let's do it.
It does look like it is getting close to our song break. Gia, would you like to introduce our first song break?
Yeah, of course. Our first song uses some rhetorical elements that we'll talk about after. But for now, you know it. We all know it. This is Madonna's Like a Virgin.
Thank you. Consent.
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 Consent is a clear yes. It's ongoing, voluntary, and coherent.
Consent cannot be made if your judgment is impaired by alcohol or drugs.
1 in 5 college-age women will experience some sort of sexual assault or relationship abuse.
But it's not just a women's issue. It affects all genders and sexual orientations.
As many as 53% of college-age students have experienced at least one incident of dating violence.
You have the right to give permission to be touched the way you want to be touched.
But you also have the responsibility to ask to touch others.
We all share this responsibility, no matter if we are a survivor, a supporter, or a bystander.
To find out more about sexual assault or how to support a survivor, please reach out to the DePaul Office of Health Promotion and Wellness at 773-325-7129 or call the 24-hour Chicago Rape Crisis Hotline at 1-888-293-2080. Consent. Don't make a move without it.
And we're back. Welcome back to Skull Radio on DePaul Radio, Chicago's College Connection. That was a lovely PSA on consent by DePaul Radio. Thank you for that. Consent, it's important, we support it here at the Echo Bowl.
Of course we do.
So we're talking about rhetoric. That was Madonna's Feel Like a Virgin, which has a lot of rhetorical elements in it.
A lot of rhetorical elements, devices, tools. Madonna knew what she was doing.
She did.
She really did.
So in this next little part of the show, we're going to kind of rhetorically analyze like a virgin, like you kind of would in a rhetorical analysis.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look through the lyrics, as I'm looking through now, the biggest kind of rhetorical device that's used in this is simile, mm-hmm. which is likening something to something else.
Yes.
Like a virgin, she's likening herself to a virgin.
Yes. She's saying that her love feels like the first time.
Exactly. And that's a great other example that being touched for the very first time. We know because the author is not a virgin, because she says like a virgin, we know that she has been touched before. So touched for the very first time here is a hyperbole, because really she has, but this is the first time it's actually meant something to her.
Ooh.
That's the difference. That's the rhetoric.
That's the rhetoric.
That's the rhetoric.
Rhetoric.
Yeah, rhetoric. It's really funny because a lot of rhetorical devices you really wouldn't think of as having a word for them. Like I said before, mm-hmm. Another one that stands out to me in this song is when she says, your love thawed out, mm-hmm. which is an example of personification, because love is not a physical thing. It is not something that can do something else. But she's saying here that it physically thawed out. Which is
thawed out
because it was before, she said, scared and cold. So this use of personification is showing that the love they have is very, very powerful. Kristen, do you have something to add?
No, just that these devices are Madonna's bag of tricks, and she uses them to trick me into relating and dancing. Well, she doesn't trick me. You know what I mean? She achieves her
purpose. She tricks you.
I relate, and then I dance.
You're like, she did it again.
Oh, I feel her.
We all relate to Madonna on some level.
Truly.
That is because.
I truly believe.
A portion of that is because of her mastery of rhetorical devices.
That's true. Oh, yeah. Madonna knows how to make us feel loved and comfortable.
Yeah. Yes. You don't have to be as good as Madonna.
Just
it's okay
like
if
how.
You're not.
We use some rhetorical devices, just like Madonna.
Yeah.
At the Aqua Bowl.
We do.
I am like Madonna.
Gia, do you want to explain kind of the types of rhetoric that we specifically as Aqua Bowl peer tutors use?
Yeah, of course.
Amazing.
So as Aqua Bowl tutors, we do have to take on a certain kind of rhetoric or speaking style when speaking to writers. We obviously are as transparent as possible, likening to one of our main core values. Thank you very much, transparency. But we use our rhetoric in a way so we can get the end goal of helping this writer with their work, making them feel accomplished, making them feel comfortable with mm-hmm. their ideas, mm-hmm. And making sure that they can take these tools and use them in their own devices. Kristen?
Yeah, just also, we at the Equable have a very clear idea of a certain way, we're hoping the writer does improve their writing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So, like, an example of this is, like, we give manageable feedback, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that changes the game of rhetoric because your purpose is, like, more specific because the way that we think about helping writers is a specific one.
Mm-hmm.
So, that influences exactly. our rhetoric as well. Yeah.
So, in the, we all took a class to be a writing tutor. DOE 395, I believe. Mine taught by Katie Brown. Shout out, Katie Brown. You're really great.
Shout out, Katie Brown.
We love her.
Shout out Katie Brown. I love Katie
Brown.
Manager
at the Echo Ball. Really great.
Awesome.
So we learn in this class how to use certain phrases or like tones of voice or rhetorical devices to put this process in motion with mm-hmm. the writer.
Exactly.
For example, a very common phrase we use at the Echo Ball in written feedback and face-to-face feedback is
As a writer.
As a reader.
Oh, gee, yeah.
Sorry. Okay. I also say as a writer.
Yeah, that's true.
One, two, three.
As a reader.
So when we read through work, we want to make sure that we are taking ourselves out of this place of, like, a tutor or a teacher, like, suggesting that we have the authority, because at the UCLA we put a lot of emphasis on peer tutoring mm-hmm. and how we are not necessarily, like, we are not the authority on writing.
Right.
However, we are peers who enjoy and know a little bit about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're here to help other peers.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Great yeah. example.
Yeah. So as a reader, really, it puts us out of the authoritative position and places us in a position that's just like, we read this
mm-hmm.
and this is how I feel when I read this,
because
being more
yeah.
transparent with the writer
mm-hmm. when you write something, it's for
someone
else to read, even if it's just a professor reading it. The idea is that people in general are reading it, so
exactly
the role of feedback and mm-hmm. comments is to just yeah. give perspective of mm-hmm. someone who is, you know, receiving mm-hmm. the function of the work you're putting out.
I feel like I use a lot of I would do this
yes.
kind of things
mm-hmm.
because I also make sure to place myself as this main subject, saying, like, in my own opinion mm-hmm. to, again, take away from that authoritative mm-hmm. position
in my own writing
yeah
practice,
in my own
I like
process
to.
Exactly.
I find it helpful mm-hmm. if I
do this.
Yeah.
Draft.
I do really appreciate at the Akubo that the rhetoric we use with writers, like Gia said, is very peer oriented, and it's very about building that rapport and letting people know that they can come to us and not be judged, and we're not going to sit there and make fun of your paper. We just want to read it and help you make it the best it can be.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel yeah. like our rhetoric that we use to talk to writers does a good job of showing that.
Exactly.
You know?
Rhetoric also is something that we work with at the Writing Center in papers. I get a lot of students from WRD 103 courses who are writing papers on rhetorical analysis, taking articles and doing rhetorical analysis. And we have to talk about rhetoric a lot.
It's true.
Rhetoric directly relates to one of the Akobo's core values as in a genre. We mm-hmm. work lots of different genres and lots of different modes of papers at the Writing Center.
Mm-hmm. All of them, pretty much.
Yeah, so
pretty much all of them.
Doing analysis on rhetoric is a type of paper genre.
Mm-hmm.
Well, amazing. Mm-hmm. Yes, Emily?
If I could, just for all of our listeners who may be in these classes in Word 103, a quick definition, because like we said, rhetoric is this weird word that is yeah. tossed around all the time.
No one really knows.
So if you don't really know what a rhetorical analysis is, a rhetorical analysis is an essay that will break down a work into different parts and explain how those parts work to convince the mm-hmm. reader of what they're trying to convince. So if you're doing a rhetorical analysis on Like a Virgin, your thesis could be Madonna uses simile to convince people that she is in love with this man.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's kind of what a rhetorical analysis would do, is you explain how the work you're doing. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily focus on the content of the work, mm-hmm. but you focus on how well the work convinces you of mm-hmm. its argument.
Mm-hmm. There are also emotional appeals you can analyze mm-hmm. in rhetoric. These include pathos, logos, and ethos.
Yeah. yes, there we go.
Bringing you back.
Pathos, we love senior year.
Yeah. Pathos, logos, and ethos relate to how you are communicating with the writer and what you're appealing to. Pathos right. relates to the emotions of the writer and reader. So you are directly discussing how this makes people feel and how it might make the reader feel. Logos is using fact or logic. So for example, if you're doing a research paper, you use a lot of statistics, it's probably going to make you look pretty factual and be mm-hmm. like, okay, I believe it.
that's happened to me before.
Yeah.
I've read statistics and believed them, and you're just over like, the yeah, other guy who made generalizations and assumptions. Yeah, because it's like, okay, mm-hmm. this guy didn't provide any hard facts. This guy's got the numbers and the graphs.
Yeah.
And even though the X and Y axis might be deceptive, this guy had no facts. This yeah. guy has a bunch.
Bunch of facts.
That in itself, that having of facts. Yeah. Is rhetoric.
Mm-hmm. And you can manipulate them. I mean, that's a really interesting topic in statistics mm-hmm. is to think about the way people present statistics. You can make data be so many things. You yeah. can make it say almost anything a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. So it's like,
but because of the rhetorical concept of having factual evidence,
dude, that's interesting.
It's automatically more convincing.
Yeah.
The last one is ethos, which is applying to I guess you could say it's if you have credibility. Mm-hmm. I usually relate this to like what kind of sources you're looking at. If you mm-hmm. are you pulling from, you know, the national like data reserve yeah. of this thing, or are you pulling from an essay that you yourself wrote in yeah, yeah. like freshman year of high school? What is more credible? Are you making yourself credible mm-hmm. by explaining like, you know, things that you know already know, or things that like the person you're talking about knows?
Yeah.
It's that concept of yeah, it's that concept of if we think a person is smart and credible, we are more likely to believe them.
Mm-hmm.
So
and if they're rhetoric. emotional, you get all three.
So this is a lot.
I love
it's
that.
A lot to analyze rhetoric. Yeah. And it can be overwhelming.
Of course.
However, if you are in WRD 103 and you're working with us and you're like, what? we do have writing groups at the Equable that you can utilize. So meeting on Mondays in SAC 212 from 4:30 to 6 p.m. You can come to the WRD 103 writing group where Equable tutors can help you out with your writing WRD 103 specific papers,
mm-hmm.
Which we are fairly knowledgeable about.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get generalized help, feedback, and we can also send that to your professor if you need to tell your professor, hey, look at me.
Hey,
getting some help, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is okay. Yeah. Everyone needs a little help.
Of course.
But yeah, shameless plug
for writing groups.
Writing groups are great.
We love writing groups.
I do yeah. love writing groups. Ugh.
Yeah.
If you want more information, please go to the Equable website. Under writing groups, there yeah. are lots of fun and
yeah,
yeah. We also
everyone
work,
should partake.
We also work with like non-academic work. Like
yep.
if you wrote a short Certainly. Story, if you're like a creative writer and you just want some feedback, we have writing groups for that too.
Yeah, it's very laid back and collaborative and friendly.
Yeah, there you mm. go.
So writing groups are awesome.
Yeah.
Emily. Emily. Oh,
that's okay. I've changed my mind.
Oh, really?
Okay, understandable.
Cool. But writing groups are still great.
Writing groups are great. Please utilize them. So next we're going to chat about rhetoric and how it's used in non-literary devices.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Convincing people of a certain thing, not through written word.
Yes.
Kristen, do you want to... Yeah. Talk a little about this. I think you read a book.
I once read a book. Yeah, no, it's a cool book.
I once read a book.
Yeah, just a little bit more about what Gia was saying. To me, it's just like an interesting distinction between analyzing someone else's writing, the rhetoric they use in writing, and analyzing just, you know, daily occurrences or like things about life that aren't writing. There's kind of a guy who championed this Roland Barthes. He's a literary theorist. I think he's French. He is French. Confirmed French man. Yeah, he wrote this cool book called Mythologies. And basically what Roland Barthes does in his book Mythologies is rhetorically analyze tons of things that aren't writing, and they're not anything that
they're not speeches.
Anyone has created. Right. They're not writing. They're not speeches. They're not advertisements. They are things. So I'm going to read a couple of the essays from his contents page just to give you an idea of all the different things he's written about. He's rhetorically analyzed, rather. He specifically rhetorically analyzes. So he's got an essay called Martians, the Poor and the Proletariat. Excuse me. The Harcourt Actor, Romans in the Movies, The Writer on Vacation, and my favorite, Garbo's Face. Not sure what that one is. He's also got Power and the Cool, Wine and Milk. And I'm going to read a little bit of what he wrote about children's toys, because I think it's super interesting that he rhetorically analyzed children's toys.
Yeah.
Because listen, it is, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, we talked a little bit about this pre-show planning on Wednesday and how it's kind of weird how children toys enforce so much into children.
Yeah, this man, he's great for this. So this is an excerpt from Toys by Roland Barthes. So French toys, all are miniature reproductions of human objects, as if to the public eye, the child were, all told, nothing but a littler man. And so that's him. What I'm saying is, like, yeah, he's saying that society just, you know, views children, young children, as future participants, and just wants
to,
indoctrinate them as early as possible via things that are supposed to be fun, recreational. Mm-hmm. The defense I always give to children's toys is that maybe they are really fun for kids because kids feel like they're participating in the things they see around them and can't understand.
True.
Interesting debate.
Yeah.
He also writes, the fact that French toys, literally in italics, prefigure the universe of adult functions can only prepare the child to accept them all, constituting for him, even before he can think about the alibi of a nature which has created, for all its time, soldiers, postmen, and Vespas. So the last part, we get lost in the last part, but the first part's great. He's talking about the fact that the way children's toys are designed implies something about the designer, you know, the adults and the way they view kids.
Yeah.
I just think it's really interesting. This guy wrote this book. It's such a good book. Mm-hmm. All the essays, just really intriguing. He rhetorically analyzes life for the most part.
Yeah.
And he's great at it. What's up, Gia?
Yeah. We talked about some children's toys that we experienced as children.
Yeah.
That felt like this. For example, I've always talked about how when you get dolls, like when a young girl receives a baby doll, which is a very, you know, like common and, you know, widely accepted toy for a small child, small girl.
Right.
This is basically just reinforcing the concept of like maternalness. Mm-hmm.
Into
super
this young
child.
They are
so
young themselves.
Yeah, here's a baby. Someday you're gonna have to take care of a real baby, but for now it's plastic. Yeah, and this is done with a lot of different things. Like, you ever have that tiny kitchen set when you were a kid? Little pots, little fake food.
Fake cash register.
There was nothing
the
I
worst.
Wanted more as a child than a job where I opened a cash register and like worked with, and used took money and put it, like, I was fascinated by having a job
and having a cash register real.
And then I got one and then it was like a mess. Emily, you want to comment on that?
I do. I actually have a really good example of kind of an anomaly in this kind of idea, because growing up, I grew up with two brothers, so I grew up with lots of princess things and Barbies and baby dolls.
Girl.
You know, I was a girl. I was the girl. And my brothers had trains and play toolboxes and stuff. But
toolboxes.
They had play tools, play power tools. It was great. However, my youngest brother, I'm not going to say his name because I don't want to embarrass him, but my youngest brother reached an age where he realized that my baby dolls were really, really cool. Mm-hmm. So he would throw a fit because I had baby dolls and he didn't. So my parents bought him a baby doll that he named Baby and carried around everywhere.
There you go.
But I thought that was really great because in that moment, my parents were rejecting that rhetoric of toys that we're talking about, and that girls should have these
girls
baby
get dolls
because
they have to be maternal.
Exactly. They didn't care about that. It's a baby who wants to play with a toy. Let them play with the toy.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what my parents did.
Taking the rhetoric out of the toy.
Well done, parents.
Well
there
done,
I'm
well
proud.
Done, parents.
It almost is.
Class for them. Yeah. I also think about this in the context of like toy soldiers and how young boys get obsessed with this concept of war.
It's the pre-video
like,
game.
Yeah,
video
it's
game.
Pre-video game. Video game. You play. You play war.
Mm. Play war.
Yeah, you
Sorry.
Play war, mm-hmm. and so you. You know, you play with your soldiers, and they attack each other, and someone wins. And war is a very real and scary thing, but we enforce it so our younger generation's okay with it.
And we weirdly glorify it at times to young kids through these toys.
Early patriotism,
if you will. We won't even talk
about
movies. We just won't talk about the rhetoric of Hollywood movies,
we
right?
don't have
the
We're time. We're not going there. We don't have the time.
Don't touch it.
I think it's actually time for our next song break. Again, another song that uses a lot of rhetorical devices. Emily, do you want to intro a little?
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm very excited to play this song on the radio. This is one of my personal favorites, an old fave, and it uses so many rhetorical devices. See if you can pick some of them out. But if you can't, don't worry, because we'll tell you what they are after the break.
Yeah.
For $1 billion, the question is, who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
Well, the party was nice, the party was bumping. And everybody having a ball. Until the fellas started name calling. And the girls respond to the call. I have a boom and shout out.
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
I see the dance people had a falcon. So Billy Bond and get out. Get back, Gruffy. Bash, Gruffy. Get back, you flea invest in mongrel. Gotta tell myself I'm man, no get angry.
Hey, yeah, yeah,
to where the girls calling them canine, hey!
V-I-O.
But they tell me, hey man, it's part of the party.
V-I-O.
We put a woman in front and a man behind. I have a woman shout out.
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
Say, a doggy is nothing if he don't have a bone. Bash Gruffy, get back, you flea invest in mongrel.
Well, if I am a dog, the party is on. I gotta get my groove on, got my mind, I'm gone. Do you see the rays coming from my eye? Walking through the place, the Digimon is breaking them down. Me and my white socks, short, dealing, and gassy color. Any caliber, do I think I knew, that's why they call me Pitbull. Cause I'm the man of the land, when they see me, they say, ooh.
Who let the dogs out? 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 Who let the dogs out?
And that was Who Let the Dogs Out by the Baha Men.
What a tune.
Oh, what a tune.
And how many rhetorical devices are used in this song?
A lot.
So many.
Not countable.
Pretty much the biggest one that you will notice is onomatopoeia, which is, I feel like everyone hears about onomatopoeia all the time. Like that word, like, you know, kids are excited that like they can spell onomatopoeia, but don't actually know what it means. Well, onomatopoeia is using a word that sounds like
a sound.
The sound. Yeah. So
pop,
when,
bang,
so, exactly,
fizz.
Exactly. So when they say woof, that's onomatopoeia because they're trying to sound like a dog.
Amazing.
Which I think is great. There also are a lot of different questions. Like a rhetorical question is a question that doesn't really have an answer. So that who let the dogs out?
Who?
We really are never going to know. But the point,
but like who let?
But
the
you
dogs
draw
out?
Attention to the fact that the dogs have been let out by asking who let them out. We're not going to get that answer,
who
but we're thinking about it now because
but
they
you're
made
thinking
us
about it.
Rhetoric,
yeah,
rhetoric.
Wow, wild. That's amazing. We love Who Let the Dogs Out. It's honestly an iconic song.
It is.
We are dancing the
it
whole
is.
Time.
We also did a little research as we were chatting and jamming, and we found that this song is actually about the way the Baha Men wrote this song is the woofs, and a lot of the kind of racier lyrics are supposed to be representative of catcallers on the street. And the women are the people saying, who let the dogs out?
They're
saying
catcallers
over it
with dogs.
So the Baha Men were pretty woke about it. They were like, catcallers are bad. They're dogs.
Woke boys.
Even,
we love Baha Men.
They even go so far as to use some pretty intense metaphor when they say, get back Fluffy, back Scruffy, get back you flea-infested mongrel.
There we go.
Talking to a man. That's
that's me.
That's
some pretty intense metaphor there.
So
for men.
So we're wrapping up here. We're in the last few minutes. Now's that's usually the time for what you're reading. Does anyone have anything they're reading? Because I do.
You go first.
Gia, what you're reading?
I'm not really reading it. I always say I'm reading it and people get mad at me. I'm listening to the audiobook again.
It's okay.
I'm sorry. I'm a busy person and I don't have time
to
read.
There's no shame in audiobooks.
I know.
Words are words.
So I'm listening to the audiobook of A Little Life. It's an amazing book. It's about four friends. I actually talked about it a while ago because I got the physical book from the Chicago Public Library and then I never read it. It's by Hania Yanagihara. I'm going to try that again. Hania Yanagihara. She's incredible. It's about like queer friendship and like suffering of the late 20s. In your life living in New York.
Yeah, well.
It's a big, big book. It's like going to be taking me like 30 hours to finish it.
Oh, wow.
But it's really good so far. It's really sad. Emily?
I also actually have something. I'm not reading it yet, but I'm going to be reading it very soon.
Yeah.
It's actually a comic book.
Yay.
I have a roommate who is very into comic books. It's basically his whole life. But I personally am not a fan of superhero stories. So he looks for comics for me that are not superhero stories. So there's a comic coming out called Gideon Falls, which is a horror thriller comic. Has nothing to do with superheroes. It's supposed to be really, really spooky.
Cool.
And the thing about these independent comic books that are not really affiliated with DC or Marvel is that these are usually written by people who like write a little bit differently than typical comic book writers. So some of the literature in it is like very interesting, very cool. And it really is its own unique genre is indie comics. So I'm pretty excited to jump into that.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Super.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's it, guys.
Best
I think
of
that's
luck.
Our show.
That is our show.
Thank you for tuning in to Radio DePaul Chicago's College Connection. We are Scholar Radio of the Uncle Bowl at DePaul. If you need any help with your writing or want some peer feedback, feel free to stop by the Uncle Bowl. That's the University Center for Writing-Based Learning. We're located in SAC 212. And we're open 9 to 7 every weekday.
Mm-hmm.
Weekends are a little different, but yeah, it's usually 12 to 5, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Fridays and Saturdays in the Loop. We're located in both campuses, and the Loop it's in Lewis 1600. that's it. Have a beautiful rest of your Friday, Skrull Nation. Thank you for tuning in. And we will catch you on the flippity flap.
See you soon.
See you next week.
Bye. Same time, same place.